the big idea for me and the big lesson that I learned was how important it was for activists of color, organizers of color, and specifically women of color to participate in direct action, to be arrested, to have been in jail. Like, that experience of being in jail taught me more than ever the importance of folks of color from the communities they represent to be part of the direct action movement. And the reason I say that is because we had such an opportunity to interact with the entire jail system in a way that I think it had an impact that just can't be underestimated. So when we were arrested at the Puppet Warehouse, we were, you know, we were transferred to the local jail, you know, the initial holding pen, wherever.
The roundhouse.
The roundhouse, that's it. We were held there, and immediately, you know, we were in the context of all of these, you know, police officers and all of these, you know, just regular secretaries and all these people who worked for whoever worked in the roundhouse and sort of the local police department. And so it just hit me like immediately how these were folks, you know, just like regular folks, you know what I mean? Latino folks, Black folks, you know, working class white folks. And they really looked at us like they had no idea what was going on. So immediately there was this opportunity to begin to relate with regular folks who are immediately tied to the prison system, to police and prisons, to the prison industrial complex. And for me, I immediately realized when we were arrested that this was really going to be our job. And when I say our job, I mean the maybe handful of women of color who were in jail. Because I would love to see the actual statistics of all the folks who were arrested. But to my recollection, there was but a handful of women of color who were arrested. And that was very evident from the beginning. And so, you know, I think our entire approach and specifically myself and a woman who went by the name of Plum Blossom, that was her name for the action, she and I immediately became aware that we needed both to build bridges with our white anarchist comrades, and then we needed to build with the people who were inside of the jail, right? And that was not just prisoners, but that included the staff who was there, because that could be our brother, that could be our sister. Right. That could be our next door neighbor, and that they were a priority. And so, for example, we chose not to, you know, resist the arrest process. You know, there were folks inside who got naked, who were, you know, and it was all part of, you know, bottling up the system, so that it was a strategy that, you know, okay, you could say, okay, I understand the logic. But I think for us, that immediate relationship with people, right, who were directly involved with the prison system, right, was much more important. So, like, if I could have a conversation with a cop and let him know what was going on, I knew that that would have more of an impact than, you know, me kind of stomping around and taking off all my clothes, right? That's what began to be our experience. And when we got moved out of the roundhouse, we got moved to, and maybe you have a better recollection of the jail we were sent to, because we were actually sent to
I don't remember what it stands for, but I remember all the women. But I don't remember too well.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, but it's sort of, you know, outside of Philly in Pennsylvania. We got sent to the prison, and I apologize that I don't recall the name of the prison, but we were in a couple of different holding cells. You know, we were sort of in a maximum security initially, then we got moved to general population, and then we got isolated again. But in each of those experiences, you know, from the roundhouse and moved to prison, they were experiences where we had the opportunity to really interact with, again, folks who were directly involved with the prison system. And so we had the opportunity at one point to be in general population. And, we were in a prison cell that was sort of open, and there were, it looked like almost like a large open dorm room. You know, you had bunks and then individual beds, and, you had like sitting kind of gathering areas, the television was on, where the women who were in prison were just, this is their home. This is where they lived. And myself and some of the other women had the opportunity to be there. And we knew that we had to make connections with those women, and I remember there was a woman, one of the lady prisoners was like braiding Plum Blossom's hair. We had people offering us food, asking us, if we needed anything. And, we made a point to sit and talk with them about what was going on, right? What were they watching on television, right? They were like, yeah, we saw those cop cars and, we saw people slashing the tires and, like people were junking these cop cars, and they were really excited about it. They were really excited to see it. But the truth is they had no idea. They had no idea why that was happening. And when they heard us talking about, this is about you, like, why are you here? What is this about? Why is this jail filled with queer women, with Puerto Rican women, with Black women? When they heard us talking about that, they couldn't believe it, So for us to be there in that moment, and make connections with those women, was so important, in terms of even, bringing to prison the message of what was going on the outside, making them a part of that. And simultaneously to what we were doing, the men were actually, and, you'll probably get another interview about this, but simultaneously the men were organizing. Right. They tried to make communication amongst themselves, but with the male prisoners as well, and came up with a list of demands for, what was happening in prison for the men in general, not the male activists, but what was happening for the men in general. And so it really gave us a unique opportunity, again, to connect with the folks directly impacted by the prison industrial complex, to make that connection. In a way that we would not have otherwise, right? And in a way that we could never have learned the lessons ourselves, right, of what it was actually like to be inside of the prison at that time.
I think I might remember you saying something when you got out about, like, how the police in the street were different from the guards in the prison. Like, maybe, did you feel like you could talk more to the guards in the prison than...
I felt like when we were in prison, I just felt like they did not come to us with an antagonism. They weren't treating us with antagonism. I think that they were doing their job, and there was a sort of a detachment, a detachment, an initial detachment from us. And I think that when they were agitated, when people were aggressive towards them or defiant, that they responded in kind. And when, I feel like the efforts that we made at just making connections, then they just treated us like, okay, you're cool people, and I'm doing my job, which mm-hmm. is absolutely very different from, any treatment that I've received in the streets. And I have to say, I don't think it's a mistake that they bring out when you're, and I don't think that the difference in the cop's race is a small thing. I think that in my experiences of being arrested and in being arrested in Philly, that the people they keep, the cops that they have on the outside tend to be white, and then the cops on the inside tend to be people of color. And that's my experience, with R2K. Yeah, I feel like my experience, and I think the point that I think that I'm trying to make is that, it's not that like, oh, you can, a cop is part of the prison system, right? And so by default, it's not the person that he is, but the role that he takes on, right? And that's what's so, it's really important to remember. That's why it's not, oh, I'm just doing my job. That's not okay. You know what? You can't just do your job if your job is fundamentally to, like, to oppress people, right? But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that even within this really repressive context, that the role that we bring as activists, right, and the message that we bring and how we relate to another person and connect with the human part of them and connect with the part of them that knows this way better than we do, right? If the cop is a man of color, right, or a woman of color, that this is her job, she knows very well what's going on in the streets of Philly and what the repression of Timony is like. They know much better than we do. You know, so for me to attempt to make an enemy first rather than connect with that person, you know, to touch that part of them, I think is a grave mistake. And I feel like that's one of the lessons that I really took from that experience, because I think that's relevant whether, you know, in any context, any organizing context, you know, and especially if we hope to connect with folks in all sectors, you know, in the mainstream and all the institutions that we're related, that we relate to and that we're a part of, those are the folks we're relating to. You know, they're just like the CEO or they're just like the cop, you know, they're just like the person working in that prison.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really feel like they've been able to sort of try to co-opt a lot of communities in Philly by, or sort of cut communities apart from themselves, because it's like half the community is in jail and half the community is working at the jail. The number one employer of African Americans in Philly is like this private security firm, and they don't have guns or like police powers, but they're really low paid. But it's like, I feel like it's part of that whole like trying to like tear the community apart. And one thing I really admire about prison activists here is like they have this prison summit, prison health summit every year, and they invite, you know, workers from the Philadelphia prison system, and they participate in the discussions, and a lot of the discussions are about activism, and you can see, like, people care, and they really have a lot of ideology about, like, blaming, like, they blame the parents, and they'll blame, you know.
That's right.
It's amazing to watch those contradictions, like, play out in the room. My friend Laura McTighe has, she's the one who started that prison health summit that they have every year where those meetings happen and or the workshops happen. And she was in RCK, and I actually had dinner with her tonight. And she was saying about how, like, being in jail during RCK, she had already been a prison activist, and she said she remembered the people from SLAM and, like, having already been working on prison issues. Like, she felt like herself and people from SLAM, like, learned so much from being locked up in, you know, with other people in the system.
Wow.
And I think that probably influenced the fact that she invites employees of the prison system to participate in this, basically an activist summit. It's kind of amazing.
That is so, that's so amazing. That just sounds like such an amazing, amazing, like, project, you know. And I think, you know, what you reminded me of, Susie, was that, you know, when I, you know, most of my organizing has been in schools, right? And, you know, I think it's very easy because, of course, I mean, what an obviously, like, repressive institution, right? We're talking about prisons, right? But what is the, you know, what is the flip side of that are schools, you know? And when you talked about the ideology of folks working in the prison institution, it reminded me of the ideology of folks who are in our educational institutions. So, you know, most of, you know, I think about the work I've done, like, in high schools and organizing parents and, you know, parents coming to a meeting and we're trying to organize, you know, to get a new school building and, you know, more access for, you know, for the school community to the resources it needs. And the ideology of the parents, of the faculty, you know, it resembles those that you're describing, you know, of folks who work in prisons. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about saying, well, you know, there's us and there's them, you know, and if people would just do this, then we would be okay. You know, and I think that that's what oppression does, you know, right? It turns the people affected, you know, into their own jailer, into their own oppressor. And then again, it just, again, highlights for me how important it is, like the project that your friend is working with, it's called Prison Health Summit.
Yeah, that's roughly the name of it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, it just reminds me of, like, how important it is, again, to have projects that are, you know, you're working directly within folk, within the community that's being impacted or that's part of these institutions. You know, whether you're, you know, working with folks in prisons, when you're working with folks in, you know, if you're a social worker in a hospital, if you're a teacher in a school, you know, for me, all of that is the same.